Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn. Without further ado, here's Austin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. I have no idea what time it is because this is a podcast. We listen to podcasts whenever we listen to it. Perhaps you are lounging on a chaise longue. Is that what they're called? Somewhere sunny in the Caribbean. Today's going to be really interesting because we are talking to... Do we call you a hero? I don't know. You're freaking amazing. Gene Driscoll, who is the executive director of the NC State College of Design. Welcome.
Thank you.
You are a competitor. You are a true competitor. You have won the Boston Marathon six consecutive times. You're, no?
Eight times, seven consecutive.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Who's counting?
Losi. Actually, I did the same thing. People were like, how many do you win? I'm like, they're like, 11? I'm like, 12. 12, yeah. Exactly, yeah. 12. You don't forget that.
Yeah.
And you are a multiple gold medalist in Olympian races as well. Mm-hmm. Were those the marathons as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
But you are in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So this is a hardcore elite sport. You are at the top, or for a very extended career, at the top of your game, and a savage competitor, and a winner, winner, chicken dinner all the time. But today, you get interviewed about this all the time. Today, we're going to talk about your role as executive director of development.
Mm-hmm.
And how this competitive spirit translates into what I hope we find is a very complex landscape. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Development. It's a big word, but a lot of the world doesn't operate in a nonprofit atmosphere. Most people work for companies, and companies have profits and stuff like that. But here at the College of Design, we are on the beautiful campus of NC State right now in the Hunt Library. It's gorgeous. Google it. You have to compete. There is a competition out there to get the best assets to do the best for your school. What is development? Tell us what it is for those who have never lived in the nonprofit world.
Development is an opportunity. I have the privilege of meeting alumni from the College of Design from the earliest years. Well, the college was founded in 1948, but there are still alumni that I get to visit who graduated in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And I provide updates about what's happening in the college, but also provide opportunities for them to invest in their alma mater. Sometimes people have a passion about supporting students who might not otherwise be able to stay in school if they didn't have scholarship money. Sometimes people are interested in supporting the best and brightest faculty members who are being recruited a lot of different places, but we can hang on to them because we have an endowment that helps fund their research or helps fund a teaching assistant.
Oh, that is fascinating. There is an opportunity for you to engage backwards, and there's a place for everyone to find what they are passionate about, be it an underprivileged student or accelerating a professor's career. So you are out there encouraging people to pick and choose how they want to contribute.
We call it donor-centric fundraising. What is most meaningful to the donor that they would like to support? It might not be a student who has financial need. They might want to support a student who is among the best and brightest, and it's called a merit-based scholarship. And so a donor might want to help celebrate the outstanding success of a student. So they might create a scholarship that supports a high-performing student. Other people who come from backgrounds where they couldn't afford to go to college, but they're doing well and they want to support other students who might not be able to go, then a need-based scholarship might be of interest. Like I said, faculty, some people want to help create buildings, new buildings, to expand teaching and research and outreach. There are a lot of different ways, programs.
Right.
There are a lot of different ways for people to invest in NC State University and in whatever program they have an interest in. I happen to work for the College of Design.
And, well, so you said 1948 was the foundation of the school, the College of Design?
Yeah, actually.
That's
a long time ago.
Yes, for this discipline, because this discipline is not as, is more cutting edge than most other disciplines. I mean, design is a newer thing on the landscape.
Well, College of Design includes architecture,
yep.
And there were actually, architecture was a part of the engineering college mm-hmm. back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, early 1900s. So architecture became one of the founding departments in the school, what was then the School of Design.
Right.
The College of Design president has architecture, landscape architecture, graphic design, industrial design, art and design. It has a Doctor of Design program, which is a professional degree program. If you like to design, come to the College of Design.
That's and so I have spoken with a designer once before, and I'm interested because I would like to put these two in parallel and ask what your definition of design is.
Well, we look at design thinking. Design thinking is something that Chancellor Randy Woodson challenged my dean, Mark Hoverston, to bring to the entire campus. And design thinking is a creative solution to a problem. And
creative solution to a problem.
So
understood.
You can define that however you want. You can create a solution however you want. It's very broad, but it's an opportunity to design solutions.
Right, right. You're in essence reverse engineering. You're going from one side to the other rather than rather than heading forward. You're looking how to come from the back end. In essence, right?
Maybe.
Oh well, no.
It depends on your strategy.
It depends on what the problem is, I guess.
And it depends on the process you use. You can come at it from a lot of different angles. You can come at it from the front end, the side, any way that your perspective leads you. There's lots of different ways.
Right. All right, so now back to your core fundamentals of development. There's opportunities out there to engage with a variety of alumni and other sources. What's the competitive landscape like out there? How far are other people's attentions pulled, and how does someone in your role really engage them?
When I was brand new in fundraising about 13 years ago, I went to a training and we were taught the passion question. What would you like to accomplish with your gift that's most meaningful to you?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of different ways to ask that question. But typically, if I am meeting with alumni or current donors or friends of the college who might be interested in a particular area of study or supporting a studio, I will ask that question, what's most meaningful to you? What would you like to do with your money that's most meaningful to you? And everybody has a different motivation. So really, I I guess there's a competitive aspect to it. If people are trying to decide between two or three different ways to support something, maybe they decide to support all three,
right,
in a different way. But whatever is most meaningful to the donor, then we hope to create an opportunity for them to do that.
Right. And it seems like at a certain point, at least from your end, ego sort of plays the second stage, right? You want to bring in a donor and you want them to feel welcome. So if they choose one project within your portfolio rather than the other, you'll just be like, no, this is all good. It's the greater good.
Development or fundraising is really about relationships.
Right.
It's about creating, building, and sustaining relationships. So oftentimes I will cold call somebody and ask them if I could meet them, learn about their time on campus as a student and what's transpired in their career since they graduated. And everybody has stories to tell.
Right.
I believe everybody could write a book about their lives that would be interesting to everybody. It's why we go to movies. It's why we read books. And so really it's about establishing a relationship with somebody and helping them feel like they're connected. Sometimes people graduate and then they go to another part of the world or another part of the country, or they don't stay connected to the college.
Uh-huh.
And so I get to, in meeting with somebody, reconnect them to the college. Sometimes we bring them back to take a tour of some of the studios where architecture students are creating their models, or we go into an industrial design studio where students are actively solving some question.
Right.
And they are, we have corporations who are looking for new and different ways to improve their product or use different materials. And sometimes they will come to our faculty and say, hey, we'd like to sponsor a studio. We'd like to give you money to support students working on this design issue for us. And we've had several instances where you might have five different teams of students who come up with a solution, and the company loves two or three of the ideas and ultimately adopts one of the solutions into their business model. So this is relevant work that the students are doing, and it makes it that much more fun.
And that's really cool too, because I was thinking from the benefactor side, the alumni side, right? This is your hard-earned dollars that you made by becoming a success as an alumni, mm-hmm, of the College of Design. You can still benefit from the resources and expertise, because if you say endow a studio or something along those lines, and you come back and you see it in action, and this is your career too, this is what you do for a living, you may be inspired by, like, you get a tangible benefit out of this too. And there's something there rather than your money just going into the ether. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a win-win. The program or a scholarship is provided, is supported, but also the donor gets to feel good about how they are giving their money, investing their money as well. And I get to feel good because sometimes it's just a matter of finding out what interests a donor and matching it to a need in the college. And when you put those two things together, magic happens, and
right,
there's a lot of joy and excitement around it.
What are some of the, you mentioned some of the corporations without naming names, but what sort of industries are supported by companies and what their influence with the College of Design. Like, what are some tangible, like, what are some of the things your studios do, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Advanced materials? Like, I don't know. I don't even know. Design's a black box to me. So really fascinating to see how corporate money goes into an amazing institution and has a tangible result.
An example, we had a company who designs packaging material, and they had a type of bubble wrap that they wanted students to help evolve to another level. And I don't know all the details of that, but I can tell you at the end of the semester, it was a semester-long studio, the company said, this is a great solution, and we are going to use this. Industrial design, in particular, is it touches everything. Design touches everything. The chair in which you're sitting was designed. Mm-hmm. The microphone into which I'm speaking was designed. Mm-hmm. The toothbrush you use was designed. From the bristles to the handle, the way the handle is angled, everything. Design touches everything.
Yeah.
And so we've got a major airline who is interested in having its seats redesigned. So there are conversations about how our students might work on that. It could be materials like rubber or wood or some other composite materials. Design touches everything. So as big as your imagination is, those types of companies will come in and say, will you give us a fresh look?
Now, this fresh look sponsored by these companies, obviously the institution is reaping the benefits, but how do you ethically touch what could be looked upon as unpaid labor of the students? Or is that sort of like, hey, you're actually getting on-the-job experience, and that's really, really tangible.
It's essentially an internship.
Yeah.
It's,
oh, okay, there we go.
It's part of their education.
Okay.
So they learn to work in teams. Okay. They learn to work with materials. They learn how to go through the process of identifying a problem, identifying possible solutions, experimenting with what might work. When they graduate, they're going to be working in teams. They need to know how to do the job. And so this is part of their education.
Okay. And you're right. Group socialization is an important part of education that's often overlooked. You know, a lot of people operate in a vacuum as like, and now all of a sudden you're like, no, this is a part of our curriculum to make sure that you can work. Cause this is a collaborative effort. You don't work in isolation in this discipline.
Well, if you think about architects or landscape architects that are designing new spaces, people can't do that alone.
Right.
You are working with a lot of different professionals to bring something to fruition. We work on teams throughout life. And even in my career as development, sometimes there will be a husband who has a degree from one college and a wife who has a degree from another college. And they want to create a scholarship that supports some sort of interdisciplinary work.
Oh.
And so perhaps the College of Design will work with the College of Textiles on a project that is funded by this couple, and they're excited because both of their schools are represented. And I will say, I was thinking about this earlier. People have a pride in their association with their community, with their school. I mean, when you're in a program, it's a small community. And a lot of our alumni are intensely proud of their tenure as students in the College of Design. It's a very difficult school to get into. You have to have your portfolio reviewed. You have to be interviewed. And once you get through several steps, then you may or may not be enrolled. And so there are people who just feel proud about how hard their education was. And people in the sciences could talk about that. People in a lot of different disciplines, there is a pride in a strong work ethic.
Right. And also the commensurate success of your alumni. Because this, I mean, I wouldn't even think of like making a portfolio at age 17 to get into a college of design. That would not, I coasted through life, let's be honest. Your alumni must be immensely successful, but even the most, as the executive director of development, I guess one big thing that comes to mind is, how do you weather economic uncertainty? How do you weather the storms of the ebb and flow of the economy to maintain the highest caliber of education that you're trying to strive for? Because let's not forget that that is the ultimate goal of all of the aggregation of all these donors. What strategies do you use to, or does, can any nonprofit use to sort of keep independence in the face of externals?
Well, universities in part are state supported, but there aren't enough dollars that come from the state to meet all the budget needs, which is why fundraising is important. Mm-hmm. And the level of excellence across NC State University, across universities in this country, is high. And when the economy has downturns, it doesn't necessarily affect the quality of the teaching or the learning experience. You might need to cut a faculty line because you just lost $200,000 in state support because of the downturn of the economy. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't that doesn't mean that the level of excellence in your program decreases. It just means the faculty need to pull together to try to shore up some of the departing faculty's teaching load.
Right.
In terms of finding support for students and faculty and programs and the university.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In general, there are some years that are low years because of what the economy is doing, and there are other years that are really good years because of what the economy is doing. But I think the university, as a state institution, is financially secure enough that it will not affect the quality of the education.
Got it. And
I just like to clarify, you're talking about nonprofit. NC State University is a state institution, and then there is the NC State University Foundation. That's the nonprofit mm-hmm. side through which I do fundraising. The College of Agriculture has their own foundation. The College of Textiles has their own foundation. So that's the nonprofit side of what I do for NC State University.
Right. No, thank you for clarifying that. I coming from a prior nonprofit background, I had that internalized too. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that you pointed that out, mm-hmm. that this is, there is an umbrella and then there are separate silos of fundraising operating underneath this great big umbrella of the NC State University and each of its commensurate colleges.
Separate organizations.
Yeah. What is communication across lines like? Other than obviously that sounds really cool, like having an interdisciplinary between two separate schools. How does everyone communicate and keep on the same page as to strategies? Because you're all in the one big family. Is there communication cross lines?
NC State is an incredibly collaborative university. Mm-hmm. The deans talk with one another, meet regularly. The chief development officers, of which I am one, get together, talk about what our deans are doing in terms of fundraising for projects. If our deans are working collaboratively, we're going to be working collaboratively with our teams. I have been at NC State University for about 14 months, and I've just been delighted by how collegial and collaborative everybody is. So I think the communication is good, the partnerships are excellent, and it makes this more exciting for alumni and donors and corporations when they see those sorts of partnerships and collaborative working arrangements.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. What are some things that we've seen from NC State and that we hope to see in the future? Some hallmarks of the design school, like, oh, we did the first yabba-da-boo, or we invented the shabby sham sham. These are not real words. I'm trying to. What are some innovations that you're working on right now in the College of Design that, you know, could use some help? I want people to be able to help, be it alumni listening right now or, you know, people off the street, because people off the street take affinity towards things. Mm-hmm, So I just want to know what's the crown in your jewel that you love to look back on, and what's the thing that you're working on right now that you really love?
There are a lot of there's a lot that I could talk about. I think one of the points of pride is in the history of the college. When it was founded, there were faculty members from around the world, world leaders, who came and taught at the College of Design. And it's one of the reasons why alumni are so intensely proud. Right now, we've got a lab called the Coastal Dynamics Lab, and it is a program that is looking at the shorelines and the erosion of land, either naturally or when there are natural disasters that come and wipe away communities. And so they have several different partnerships with communities and other nonprofit organizations where they are looking to solve the design of communities so that they're not getting washed away or getting flooded. Here in North Carolina, that's something that is incredibly relevant.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Coastal Dynamics Design Lab page right now, and this is real life. This is really happening right here, and this is the forefront of future civic planning.
Well, and to go back to a point I made earlier, the work that's being done is relevant.
Yeah,
it's not just work for the sake of faculty to write papers and students to check off the boxes of the credit hours that they need. They're actually doing applied work that is making a difference in real time.
Yeah, which that's okay. That that touches on a really cool point, because there has been this, not groundswell, but there's been this murmur amongst academia and those who hover within and around it about the demise, not the demise, but the recalibration towards more esoteric learning at the expense of practical applied learning. Some people call it the trade school. Other people call it schools of art and design. Other people call it, you know, engineering schools. But it seems like you do not fall into that category. This is real practical solutions.
Well, there's a process of learning. So our first year students do what we call a first year experience, and there is a critique at the end of the semester where we get people from industry or older alumni come back, and they review the work that the students have done, and they're learning how to work with materials like cardboard and wood and maybe plastics and paper, learning how to work with different types of paper, and they have to work in teams. And so it's sort of the ABCs and 1-2-3s of design. And so there is a necessary foundational teaching and learning that's taking place. But as the students move through their education, they graduate to bigger problems to solve.
Right.
And so I wouldn't say every class has an applied element to it, but the studios do. The studios for architecture and landscape architecture and all of the different programs in the college, those students are designing to solve relevant issues.
It's working. I mean, it's like it's actual work. You know, you are doing actual work. What projects are you looking to champion right now? In from your development lens, what are you out there right now trying to, you know, elevate? Not saying you're at the expense of other things, but what's the big crown and the jewel that you want to implement through development, through, you know, raising some more funds?
Well, the College of Design doesn't have a long history in fundraising for its unit. And so we've talked about endowments. And for those who don't know what an endowment is,
please explain that.
Yeah. An endowment is a fund that earns interest. And the interest that's earned is the award that is given to a student or a faculty member or for a program. So somebody might give a $100,000 gift, and the interest earned on it, if it's 4%, will provide $4,000 a year to be given to a student, or there's a gift agreement that lists guidelines that the donor says, well, I want this money to be used in this way. And so perhaps that $4,000 will go toward a single scholarship to recruit the best and brightest student. Perhaps it'll go toward recruiting the best and brightest faculty member. It might go toward the Coastal Dynamics Lab. It might go toward some of the virtual reality programs that our faculty and students are working on. There are as many different ways for people to create endowments as there are interests. Now, the other side of that, somebody might give a cash donation. So say somebody sends a $50 cash donation. It's called a current use gift. And oftentimes it goes into a fund that we call an unrestricted fund. In the College of Design, the dean oversees the college fund, our unrestricted fund, and he can use the money in there to supplement some of the needs in the college. Each each department. The Department of Art and Design has its own unrestricted fund. It's called the Art and Design Excellence Fund. And so an art and design alum may send a $100 gift and it'll go in there, and the department head then will get to determine how to use that. So endowments are permanent funds whose interest is used for the award. Current use funds are cash gifts that can be used immediately.
Thank you, Jean, so much for clarifying that, because you can't see it, but once she started, I used to work at a nonprofit, and once Jean started going down this road, I'm like, oh my God, yes, please explain this to everyone, because no one really gets what the difference between those two are. And I think, you know, the fact that, you know, endowments, the principal operates, and you've just got that money is operating for a specific purpose. That's why they're so important to the nonprofit world. And you are looking to create one of your major goals is to create some sort of you need a big professorial endowment, right?
The College of Design is the only college at NC State University that does not have an endowed professorship. An endowed professorship is something that allows us to either retain high-level faculty or recruit high-level faculty to the program. The minimum endowment level, there are minimum endowment levels. Mm-hmm. So,
well, because obviously you can't have an investment operating on like $71, you know?
Yeah. So at NC State University, if somebody wants to create an endowment, the minimum gift that is required is $50,000.
Right.
And then if you want to endow something called a full tuition scholarship that will pay the tuition for a student for a year, that is $250,000. If you want to endow a fund that will help support a graduate student fellowship, that's $500,000. For the professorship, the minimum endowment level is $1 million. And in theory, if interest rates are at 4%, it'll provide $40,000 for a high-level faculty member to hire teaching assistants, or run their lab, or continue research. Maybe they'll use the funds to do research somewhere else in the country, somewhere else in the world. To some, it may sound like $40,000 is like a lot of money, but when you're traveling and you are a high level superstar in your field, that money disappears quickly.
Absolutely, yeah. And we've spoken on this program to other people in, you know, the sciences and in the public/private/nonprofit funded realm, and yeah, you know what? Sometimes you just got to keep the lights on. And where does that money come from? And it's these endowments that work in perpetuity that help that, because, you know, you have labs with practical equipment. You might have to buy that machine once, but you still have to buy that machine.
Right. So the state money keeps the lights on, literally, but the equipment in the lab oftentimes either comes as a result of a donation, or faculty do write grants. And so grant and foundation money is different than what I do.
Right.
Typically, there is an expectation there will be a publication, or there are some deliverables to the funding entity. But what I do in philanthropy, it is a pure, no strings attached gift.
Yep.
And the money is used for whatever the donor directs it to be used.
And by the way, these endowed professorships produce these publications, which could go, it's one big holistic system, you know? I love it. And I love that people are so generous to help keep, I mean,
without private dollars, most universities would be in financial trouble.
Right.
The private dollars allow them to maintain their their levels of excellence. And you know, state funding is critical to state universities, but the private funding is critical as well, because it allows a college or a department to go above and beyond where they might be able to go with just the state dollars.
Right. And like you said earlier, we see actual tangible results in our community, because we've got NC State working on solving our coastal issues right now, our like actual issues right now. So this all comes back to us by putting it out into these educational communities. It does come into our communities, even if we don't think we actually see it. It always does come back. It's a big circle. I mean, I love it.
And there are some fun, fascinating projects too. Last year, the College of Design partnered with the College of Sciences and created exhibits of what science might look like. And
what do you mean, what science might look like?
So there were designers' renditions of what a molecule might look like.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. There was one exhibit that had lots of strings attached to lots of balls. And I read the placard at the time. I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was fascinating to see how an artist and designer interprets what they're seeing in a microscope,
right,
or how they interpret what they are reading in a scientific journal. And of course, there was lots of collaboration. So some of the scientists were the designers, and some of the designers understood science well enough to create their own exhibits. But design is fun,
yeah,
and practical.
Yeah. Oh, that's super cool. That's super cool. I really love that. Well, you have a board meeting to run to, but you said it's a fun board meeting, so I wasn't going to say condolences, but let's just end it on a super happy quick note. Best Boston Marathon moment.
The 1994 Boston Marathon was my fastest. I did 1 hour, 34 minutes, and 22 seconds. Sometimes when people think, oh, they're in a wheelchair, uh-huh, they think the quality and the strength may not be the same as somebody who can walk. But in my sport, a racing chair is akin to what a cyclist might use when they're cycling.
Oh, yeah.
My racing chair has no gears, but just a small hand rim that I would pound. And so my average speed for that Boston Marathon in 1994 was just under 17 miles an hour for the entire 26.2 miles. And I had food poisoning a couple days before. So I got sick several times during the race, and the fact that I still won the marathon, I was really wanting to do a sub 90 minute marathon, and I got close, but didn't quite get there. Boston is just a special place for me. 8 wins, 5 world records, all of those feel great.
I'm a New Yorker, so one of our big things is the New York Marathon. What marathon was the challenging one that you were like, oh, I don't know about this one?
Well, when I was competing, I retired after the 2000 Sydney Games, so it's been almost a generation since I was competing. I really wanted to do the New York City Marathon, but when I was competing in the late 80s, throughout the 90s, the wheelchair division was not welcome at that time. So I never
really
got to do it. Yes.
No, the wheelchair it's one division, of the highlights of the modern one.
It's the wheelchair division is relatively new to the New York City Marathon, and it's fun and fascinating and exciting, and so that's probably one of the things that I wish I could have done. Boston was my favorite. I won the LA Marathon 5 times, enjoyed that. I did a 9-day stage race in Alaska from Fairbanks to Anchorage. It was 367 miles. It rained 7 of the 9 days. It's the hardest thing I've ever chosen to do. And I was really excited when I crossed the finish line.
Best Olympic moment.
Oh, best Olympic moment. I think when I won the final marathon of my career in Sydney. I won by about a half a second. It was a final sprint. We came into the stadium and I was sprinting to the finish line and I won.
Half a second.
Yeah. I got the last gold medal given in Sydney before the closing ceremonies. And what an amazing way to close out an amazing career.
That and not just individual. This is for your country too. This is next level.
Yes.
And I've heard from other athletes that doing it for the country is a big deal.
I was intensely proud to have USA on my uniform, and to this day, when I hear the national anthem, I tear up. I can be at a basketball game. I can be on Memorial Day. Anytime I hear our national anthem, it makes me tear up. I'm so proud of our country, and it was an honor to represent the U.S. But I also have to say, the University of Illinois, where I got my undergrad degree, where my coach continued to train me even beyond graduate school, it changed my life. It had a program for student athletes with disabilities in wheelchair basketball, wheelchair track and road racing. It changed a lot of lives. And so when I wasn't representing the U.S., I was representing the University of Illinois, and I had a lot of pride wearing Illinois on my uniform as well.
And I just thought of one way to cap the whole story off. NC State College of Design, what cool chairs are they working on? could you get a little friends and family discount in? Be like, hey guys, you know.
Actually, there are some major automobile manufacturers who have been working with Australia, the U.S., Japan on building the next generation supersonic racing chair.
I bet you you were doing it a little back ago, and you probably look at these kids with their, you know how I got by?
Not really. I feel happy that there continues to be growth and improvement and they're moving forward and they're going faster, and I celebrate that.
All right. That's actually super optimistic, because I'd be like, kids these days, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, but I had my time.
You had your time. Oh, you're right.
It was brilliant.
It's someone else's time to shine.
And
yeah.
It's fun to celebrate their success.
It is. Gene, you're just a fascinating person. I love how you broke down what is the behind the scenes of the nonprofit world so well. And I love how you capped it off with just some really, really, really cool stories. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon or evening, whatever time it may be. Gene Driscoll, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Austin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.